The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter and also from the Mayo Clinic Health Letter. These are articles from the April 2021 issues. And the first article comes from the Harvard Health Letter and is entitled, Big Advances for Dental Implants, Smaller Sizes and High-Tech Placement Methods Mean More People Are Candidate for Prosthetic Teeth. If you've been told you're not a candidate for dental implants, it's time to revisit the subject. Dental implants, permanent prosthetics implanted into the jaw, have changed. In the last 5 years, we've learned that smaller implants can work just as well as regular-sized implants, and this makes more people candidates for them, says Dr. German Gallucci, Department Chief of Restorative Dentistry at the Harvard School of Dental Medicine. What is a regular-sized implant? A conventional dental implant is a post that serves as an artificial tooth root. The post is made of titanium and is surgically implanted into the jawbone below the gum line. As the jaw heals, bone grows over the surface of the post, strengthening its position. Once the implant is stable, the dentist installs another part of the prosthetic called an abutment. This is attached on top of the implant and sits above the gum line. Eventually, up to 3 months later, a porcelain crown that's customized to match your other teeth will be screwed or cemented onto the abutment, creating a new artificial tooth. The prosthetic tooth looks and works just like your other teeth. Unlike dentures, you don't have to take it in and out of your mouth. It generally lasts about 20 years. But about 20% of implants or crowns need some sort of repair around the 15-year mark, Dr. Gallucci says. And 5% of the time, the implant fails. It just won't stay in the jaw because bone won't adhere to it or because poor dental hygiene leads to infection. A regular-size implant ranges from 3 to 5 millimeters in diameter. 3 millimeters is about an eighth of an inch. And you need enough jawbone to support the implant, so it's strong and can take a lot of force as you chew. If you don't have enough jawbone to accommodate the implant, perhaps because an extraction or gum disease caused bone loss, your dentist might be able to increase jawbone volume with a bone graft, depending on your particular condition. That can add months and additional expense to a procedure that already ranges from $2,000 to $6,000 per implant. But now there's another option for people who don't have enough jawbone. Mini implants that are about half the width of regular implants. Minis range in size from 1.8 millimeters to 2.4 millimeters. Unlike a regular size implant with an abutment that attaches above the gum line, the mini implant is one piece, a post with an abutment built into it. The all-in-one construction helps make the prosthetic strong despite its small size. Mini and regular implants have similar success rates and similar costs. Technology has improved to help dentists place implants with greater precision. Well before a scheduled implant procedure, the dentist makes a three-dimensional rendering or digital cast of the mouth and jaw. This helps the dentist determine which implant type and size will work the best, and exactly where the implant needs to be placed. The computer creates a drilling guide. It's more reliable, like GPS for dentistry, Dr. Gallucci explains. It will be the standard of care in the next few years. Other advantages of this placement technology include faster, safer procedures. There's less risk of placing the implant too close to a nerve or a blood vessel, Dr. Gallucci says. Less invasive surgery. Instead of flap surgery, in which the dentist cuts a flap in the gum to insert the implant, the computer guides the dentist to drill right through soft tissue to the jaw. More efficient tooth design. Computer renderings help dentists design crowns that work with a patient's own chewing patterns. Many implants are also being used to anchor dentures. The trend is to make the denture fixed and not removable. It works like natural teeth, and people like that, Dr. Gallucci says. But it takes more minis than regular size implants to hold this kind of prosthetic in place. If we can use a regular-sized implant, we prefer that. The denture is hard on the mini implant and increases the failure rate, Dr. Gallucci says. Despite the advantages, mini implants aren't for everyone. They're expensive, and Medicare doesn't cover them. But if you have missing teeth and low jawbone volume and can afford them, mini implants may help restore one or more teeth for a more natural, comfortable feel. Now we're going to discuss exercise savvy. This again is from the Harvard Health Letter, and it's entitled "The Best Core Exercises for Older Adults." After a long winter with lots of isolating and maybe too little physical activity, it might be time to give your core muscles more attention. The muscles located throughout much of your trunk are the key to supporting your lower back and helping you to stand, to get out of a chair, bend, lift, and maintain your balance. So regular maintenance and tune-ups of the core muscles are important. Your core muscles provide stability for the moving parts above and below them, the mid-back or thoracic spine that helps you twist and turn, and the hips that move you up and down, back or forward, says Marty Bohm, a physical therapist with Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Which muscles make up the core? Generally speaking, the core starts at the lower rib cage and extends to the buttocks. Core muscles in the abdomen include the long rectus abdominis muscle in the front, the external and internal obliques on the sides, and the wide flat girdle in the front called the transversus abdominis. In your back, a group of muscles called the erector spinae help you stand up tall. The gluteal muscles in the buttocks help you extend your leg, push off from a starting point, walk, and climb stairs. And in the pelvis area, the iliacus and the psoas muscles enable you to lift your legs and remain stable while standing. And the quadratus lumborum, a long muscle on each side, helps you to bend the side and the back. In the old days, sit-ups and crunches were the go-to moves to keep your core muscles in good shape. But these exercises are not as effective as we once believed. They strengthen only a few muscles, and they pose risks for older adults. They're dangerous because you're pulling on your neck, Bohm says, and they don't train your core. They train the hip flexor muscles. If those muscles get too strong, they pull on the low back and contribute to back pain. So what are the best core exercises? A much better approach to strengthening your core is working several core muscle groups at the same time, just the way you would naturally if you were lifting something or climbing. For older adults, Bohm recommends three exercises. The first is the bridge. Anybody can do a bridge. You start in a recumbent position on your back, then lift and hold your buttocks off the ground, Bohm says. It's effective because you create rigidity from the rib cage to the pelvis, all the way from the belly button around to the back. The whole region becomes solid, and it creates a contraction of all the muscle groups, like a corset. The next one is planks. Planks create contractions of the core, arm, and shoulder muscles as you stay in a push-up position. The key is staying as stiff as you can, like a wooden plank. The third exercise is opposite arm and leg raise. This exercise gets you on your hands and knees. As you stretch out the opposite arm and leg, you're contracting your core and the muscles in the other arm and leg as they support you. Bohm points out, movements should be slow and controlled. Don't throw your arm and leg out as fast as you can. The article goes on to describe exactly how you do these exercises. There are some pictures associated with this. The first is the bridge. In order to do a bridge, you lie on your back with your knees bent and your feet flat on the floor. The feet should be hip width apart. Place your arms at your sides. Tighten your buttocks, then lift your hips off the floor until they form a straight line with your hips and shoulders. Hold this position, then return to the start and do this 10 times. From the picture, you can see that the idea is to have everything off the ground except your shoulders, arms, and feet, and to have a straight line between your shoulders and your knees. The next one is the opposite arm and leg raise. Kneel on all fours with your head and spine neutral. Extend your left leg off the floor behind you while reaching out in front of you with your right arm. Keep your hips and shoulders squared. Try to bring that leg and arm parallel to the floor, then hold this position and return to the starting position. Next, repeat the exercise with your right leg and left arm, and do the exercise on both sides 10 times. From the picture, you can see that your right arm, body, and left leg are all supposed to be parallel with the floor, and vice versa when you switch arms and legs. The third exercise is called a modified plank. To do this, you start on your hands and knees, tighten your abdominal muscles, and lower your upper body onto your forearms, aligning your shoulders directly over your elbows, and keeping your feet in the air behind you. Keep your back straight, making your body as much like a plank as possible. You hold this position and do it 10 times. This is kind of a difficult exercise to understand without the picture. Essentially, the model has the arms bent at a 90-degree angle, the shoulders and chest and abdomen off the ground, the knees on the ground, and then the calves and feet up in the air. Finally, in the Harvard Health letter of April, two more news briefs. The first news brief is entitled, Harvard Researchers' Pill-Free Approach to Controlling Heartburn. Living a healthy lifestyle may be one of the best things you can do to tame heartburn, also called GERD, or gastroesophageal reflux disease, suggests a research letter published online January 4th, 2021 by JAMA Internal Medicine. Harvard researchers analyzed the self-reported health information of 43,000 middle-aged women who were followed for 10 years. Women who adhered to five healthy lifestyle factors, regardless of whether they took heartburn medication, appeared to prevent 40% of GERD symptoms every week. These five things were maintaining a healthy body weight, a body mass index between 18.5 and 24.9, not smoking, getting 30 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity every day, limiting coffee, tea, or soda to no more than 2 cups per day, and eating a healthy diet. Each of these factors may prevent the inappropriate relaxation of the sphincter muscle between the stomach and the esophagus, helping to keep acid from refluxing up and causing heartburn. For example, carrying extra weight around the waist can push on the stomach, forcing stomach acid up into the esophagus, says Dr. Raj S. Mehta, lead author of the study and a gastroenterology fellow at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Finally, another news brief. Do meditation and brain games boost memory and thinking skills? We already know that mindfulness meditation and mentally active life are boons to healthy aging. But do these practices also help older people struggling with mild cognitive impairment? To find out, Harvard researchers reviewed more than a dozen recent studies that looked at the effects of either mindfulness or cognitive training, including computerized programs, on older adults with MCI. Remember, that's mild cognitive impairment. In findings published online December 29, 2020, by the American Journal of Medicine, researchers concluded that both strategies have potential benefits for cognition and mood. For people with MCI, practicing mindfulness over several weeks to months seemed to sharpen attention, memory and other mental skills, and ease anxiety and depression. Similarly, cognitive training was associated with better memory, executive function, and mood. Most of the studies included in the review were relatively small and short-term, so they don't provide strong evidence of benefit, nor could they determine how long any benefit might last. But researchers say both strategies are feasible and low risk, with the potential to benefit thinking skills and mood in people with MCI. Now we need more research to find out how the benefits might translate into everyday life and endure over time. Now we're going to turn to the Mayo Clinic health letter, and this is for April 2021. And the first article is entitled Blood Pressure: What to Know to Keep Your Numbers Low. You probably know that high blood pressure isn't healthy, but since it doesn't usually impact how you feel, it's easy to put off taking it seriously. Make no mistake, high blood pressure is a serious issue. Left untreated, it can damage your blood vessels, as well as many organs over time. This can lead to problems like heart attack, stroke, atrial fibrillation, heart failure, aneurysm, kidney disease, or kidney failure, vision loss, and cognitive difficulties. The higher the blood pressure and the longer it goes untreated, the greater the risk that it will cause damage. The good news, though, is you can easily get tested for high blood pressure, and there are effective treatments and lifestyle steps you can take to keep things under control. With each beat of your heart, nutrients and oxygen-rich blood surge from your heart's main pumping chamber, the left ventricle, into an intricate network of blood vessels. These blood vessels deliver nutrients and fresh oxygen to your body's tissues and organs. They route oxygen-depleted blood back to your heart through your lungs to pick up a new supply of oxygen, then back to your heart for another journey through your cardiovascular system. Your blood pressure is the amount of force exerted on your artery walls to keep all 11 pints of your blood flowing through your body. A key force behind your blood pressure is the pumping of your heart. Your arteries are lined with smooth muscle that allows them to expand and contract as the heart pumps blood through them. This maintains blood pressure so that critical organs are supplied between heart contractions. Left untreated, high blood pressure can damage your blood vessels by causing them to stiffen or to clog and narrow due to accumulation of fatty deposits called atherosclerosis. This, in turn, can restrict blood flow through arteries and lead to problems over time, like heart attack, stroke, atrial fibrillation, heart failure, aneurysm, kidney disease, kidney failure, vision loss, and cognitive difficulties. Your blood pressure is also influenced by your kidneys, which regulate the level of minerals in your body, like sodium. Your central nervous system monitors your blood pressure and signals when adjustments to your heart rate or blood vessel width, called dilation, are necessary. Various chemical processes also influence your blood pressure. A silent killer. When the complex system regulating your blood pressure doesn't work as it should, too much pressure may build up within your arteries. The stiffer and less elastic your arteries are, the more resistant they are to the flow of blood, and your heart must exert more force to pump blood. Added force exerted on your arteries can cause your blood pressure to rise even more. When increased pressure continues on a persistent basis, your doctor may diagnose you as having high blood pressure. Often, there is no identifiable single cause of high blood pressure, in which case it's called primary or essential hypertension. This condition tends to run in families and is more common in older adults and in African Americans. Other contributing factors may include being overweight, being inactive, or consuming a high-salt diet. In general, primary hypertension develops gradually. In fact, you can have high blood pressure for years without any symptoms, which is why it's called the silent killer. It's most often discovered during a routine physical exam. In some people, high blood pressure may stem from an underlying cause, and this is called secondary hypertension. These underlying causes may include kidney or adrenal gland problems, obstructive sleep apnea, certain medications, or congenital blood vessel issues like fibromuscular dysplasia. It may appear as a sudden or severe rise in blood pressure that was once normal or well controlled. In November of 2017, the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association released new guidelines for the first time in 14 years that changed the definition of high blood pressure. The change was made to account for new evidence that health problems can occur at lower blood pressure levels. The guidelines recommend you reduce your blood pressure to less than 130 over 80. If you have a history of heart disease, stroke, kidney disease, or diabetes. If you don't have any of these conditions, aim for a blood pressure of less than 130 over 80, but a slightly higher reading may be okay. Work with your doctor to balance your goal with the risk of side effects from the medications you may need to get there, particularly as you get older, or if you have a history of falls or difficulty tolerating medication. Getting to a healthy blood pressure goal safely is an individual process and one worth discussing in detail with your doctor. Controlling high blood pressure is usually accomplished through a combination of lifestyle changes and medications. There are a variety of steps involved, including choosing healthy foods, watching your salt, getting up and moving, limiting alcohol, cutting out tobacco, and taking the right medication. And I'm going to go on and continue with this article the next time we get together. But it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I sure hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.